question tomorrow matters. Thank you for giving me part of your day. Happy, happy Easter. And remember, tomorrow really does matter, so tell a friend. And stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up after the CBS News. Stay tuned.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. Throughout the central U.S., thousands of people will be forced out of their homes over the Easter weekend by rising rivers.
My cousin was by this morning. She said, you need to get out of here, you know.
Some will crest in Missouri and Arkansas.
Every river has already exceeded the flood stage, in some instances by several feet.
And emergency management spokesman Tommy Jackson says some may not crest until next week. It wasn't just Barack Obama whose passport records were accessed by government contractors.
The State Department says the files of presidential contenders Hillary Rodham Clinton and John McCain have also been breached. That's in addition to the unauthorized snooping into Barack Obama's file. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
I talked to the senator.
Did you say you were sorry?
I told him that I was sorry, and I told him that I myself would be very disturbed if I learned that somebody had looked into my passport file, and therefore I will stay on top of it to get to the bottom of it.
The State Department's Inspector General is investigating. Some are now asking if the sneak peeks were politically motivated. It's not clear exactly what the employees saw. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
Barack Obama won an important endorsement today from the nation's only Hispanic governor, New Mexico's Bill Richardson.
You will make every American proud to be an American. And I am very proud today to endorse your candidacy for president.
Richardson could not only attract Hispanic voters to Obama's campaign, he's a superdelegate.
I think he does speak to superdelegates and to voters that this is somebody you should get behind and support. And going into the convention, that's going to be really important to Barack Obama.
CBS News political consultant Joe Trippi. Top U.S. military leaders have been presenting Defense Secretary Robert Gates with their recommendations for future troop levels in Iraq. Pentagon spokesman Jeff Morrell.
These two meetings, which lasted in total about 2.5 hours, were an opportunity for the secretary to hear the very latest thinking and analysis of these senior military leaders before they brief President Bush in the coming days.
The military has announced the death of another soldier in Iraq killed in a rocket or mortar attack south of Baghdad. The casualty toll is now just 7 away from 4,000. In Jerusalem, security was tight this Good Friday, as CBS News correspondent Robert Berger reports.
Thousands of pilgrims packed the Via Dolorosa under the careful watch of Israeli troops armed with assault rifles. But the threat of terrorism did not bother Carolyn Eden of Champaign, Illinois.
I don't walk in South Chicago at night, and here I'd see that there's good security, and I'm not worried about safety at all.
And it was a peaceful Good Friday at the 14 stations of the cross. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
In Rome, thousands of pilgrims stood in the rain and hail for services. This is CBS News.
Ace Hardware wants to make your spring spectacular. Good expert help, friendly advice, and great ways to save on all your jobs around the house. Like a Rubbermaid corner tool rack for $9.99. For a simple start and a fabulous finish, pick up a gallon of Ace Royal paint at its everyday low price. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn 10 points for every dollar you spend. But don't wait, because the sale ends Monday at Ace, the helpful place.
Price is good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Decades after it disappeared, a California man is getting his muscle car back. Steve Kathan has that story.
Discover the fun only a 65 Mustang can bring.
Eugene Brakey knew about that fun. He owned a 1965 Ford Mustang, but it was stolen in 1970. This week, the 80-year-old Costa Mesa, California man got a call from the police in San Diego. Eugene, they said, we found your car. The credit goes to the woman who's owned it since she graduated high school, 55-year-old Judy Smungeski. She noticed the vehicle ID numbers didn't match up and suspected maybe it was a stolen car. Eugene's getting the old Mustang back. Judy's not wild about it, but says it's the right thing to do. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
In a bizarre story out of Florida, a woman boater died yesterday after she was struck by a ray that jumped out of the water. Officials say she wasn't stung, but died from blunt trauma to the head caused by the collision with the Eagle Ray. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
Hi, Mom.
What's all this?
I got you a cell phone, the Coupe from Verizon Wireless. Check it out. It's got a big keypad, easy-to-read screen, plus dedicated buttons for emergency contacts. It's everything you need.
Great. But what's with the 4 zillion people?
Oh, that's the network. They come with it.
Hi.
Good to meet you.
Hey, how you doing?
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Hola.
Say hello to the Coupe, backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal. Exclusively from America's most reliable wireless network, Verizon Wireless. Call 1-800-2-JOIN-IN today.
Offer ends 4-12-08. This year, put your tax refund to good use. Turn your 1040 into Sony high-definition 1080p. Visit sony.com/1040 to find out how you can save up to $400 on a qualifying Sony Bravia HD TV. That's $400 in savings on a Sony Bravia HD TV. So handle your tax return the easy way. Choose TurboTax. Then visit sony.com/1040 to learn how you can use your tax refund and save $400 on a Sony Bravia HD TV.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, Mabel, he's doing it again. There goes that Peter B. Collins guy, clapping his mouth on the radio. And isn't he a dangerous liberal? Why don't we check his passport file?
This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel all right. The party's here on the west side, so I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck. Get the shot, cause I'm faded. Honey's in the street, say money, oh, we made it.
Well, I'll pass on the 40, but a mojito would go down smooth about now. We got a lot to talk about. An interesting program today, if I do say so myself. Our guests don't know this, but there are interesting connections among them. Robert Perry will be here in a moment from ConsortiumNews.com. He's got interesting history on the breach of passport files at our State Department. And then David Westfall, who is the bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers, including the Sacramento Bee, is going to talk with us about Sunshine Week, trying to get more openness in government to make it accessible for reporters like Bob Perry and for the general public. Then we're going to spend a fascinating hour with David Iglesias, the former Republican U.S. attorney in New Mexico who was fired. And he now flatly says the reason he was fired was that he refused to bring phony cases of voter fraud while he was encouraged to do so by Legal Central at the White House and the Justice Department. He's got a new book coming out, and it's going to be fascinating because, in part, my research on David Iglesias is informed by our friend and contributor, Jason Leopold. And Jason has an article that was published earlier this week at ConsortiumNews.com, Robert Perry's site, all about David Iglesias and the charges that he made, some last week before Senator Feinstein's subcommittee in Washington. And then Brad Friedman will be here, as usual, in our third and final hour from bradblog.com. And there's a connection there. We're going to get an update on the situation in New Mexico, where Congresswoman Heather Wilson, who's one of the people who made an inappropriate phone call to David Iglesias and then helped get him fired, well, she's now embroiled in a case of buying votes for the Republican State Convention. buying delegate votes. And we're going to get an update from Dennis Donzalski, who's on the ground there in New Mexico and who's been reporting for Bradblog. So it's going to be interesting, somewhat connected themes on disparate topics as we conduct our program today. You can call in whenever you like, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And my email is working, peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry joins us. As we mentioned, consortiumnews.com is his website. His latest book is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous President George.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate.
And the Shiite fighters, whose leader we got to agree to a ceasefire, those fighters are ignoring the ceasefire. So it doesn't seem good with the Sunnis and doesn't seem good with the Shiites. And also, there's also the Kurds, I guess. Kurds aren't psyched with us because we're supposedly occupying Iraq and Turkey is now invading and shelling them. All in all, when you add these three things up, this doesn't seem good. In fact, it seems to me like someone just
Hillary Clinton's
lit a
passport files have been opened up in the last few months. We apparently know this because they're now locked in computer files, and a flag is attached to the file anytime somebody tries to view these records. And we also are learning that two employees of Stanley Incorporated, a Virginia-based contractor, have been terminated from jobs there at the State Department. So this is breaking into an interesting way. And they're saying that the breaches of the McCain and Clinton files were only discovered today, Friday. So this is interesting, and you start to think of possible suspects. And let me just turn to you, Bob. What's your speculation?
Well, I'm really not sure. I think it does appear that the Obama penetrations were more serious from what we know initially. That it may have been less consequential when it came to at least with the Clinton situation. But there were these three cases involving Obama, but it's not clear why they did it at this point, and it's not clear if there was any incentive to provide this, to use this information in a political fashion, or even if it would have much political value.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to 92, though, you had a situation there where President Bush was, of course, trying to defeat Bill Clinton, and he was exercised about why hadn't more been done to get this kind of information out. He basically was the spark plug for Jim Baker as his chief of staff to then go get people at the State Department to look into this passport file. And they went through one night. They went out to Suitland, Maryland, to the National Archive warehouse and dug through Clinton's file and his mother's file. They didn't find what they were looking for. There'd been this rumor that Clinton may have tried to renounce his citizenship during the Vietnam War. There was no such letter, but then they used a tear in the corner of his passport file to create the basis for a criminal referral to the FBI, and the premise was that maybe one of Clinton's friends before them and removed this letter renouncing his citizenship.
So that they discovered just that the paper was torn, kind of like if you detach stapled pages from one another?
Well, or if you, say, had stapled a check or your photo to the application. It was totally innocent, but they used it as a pretext to create a criminal referral, and then they leaked it to Newsweek, which put out a story, much as the Bush folks wanted, suggesting that maybe one of Clinton's friends had tampered with his passport file to hide something incriminating. And that was then put out, and there was a firestorm, and President Bush then leaped onto it by adding that, pointing out that Clinton had traveled as a student to the Soviet Union and to Czechoslovakia, and suggesting that there might be something really dirty there, too, and there were suggestions that maybe Clinton had worked for the KGB. It got kind of out of control. But what happened was very interesting, because one of some of the Democrats on Capitol Hill then did sort of a counter-investigation, and they discovered how thin this was and what a dirty trick it was, and they exposed it. So it sort of blew up in the face of the Bush campaign and the Bush White House and became known as Passport Gate. Finally, the Inspector General of State recommended a criminal investigation of the Bush administration for what they did. Luckily for them, Joe DiGenova was picked to investigate, and even though he confirmed the basic facts of the crime, he concluded that no one had done anything wrong.
This is amazing. Now, Bob, there's some fascinating stuff in your article. People can find it at consortiumnews.com, truthout.org also picked it up. But you have, and I need to know how you got this, but you have some notes from the murder board, the pre-debate sessions where Bush was preparing to debate Bill Clinton, and I guess Ross Perot was in that debate, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it says he prepped himself with designed to spotlight doubts about Clinton's loyalty if an opening presented itself. Quote, it's hard to visit foreign countries with a torn-up passport. Number two, contrary to what the governor's been saying, most young men his age did not try to duck the draft. A few did go to Canada. A couple went to England. Only one, I know, went to Russia. And they even were prepared. We know that Poppy Bush didn't really live in Texas, but he kept a Houston hotel room. He voted there, and he declared that his official residence, his legal residence. And he was ready to respond, well, Mr. Clinton, what's your legal residence, Little Rock or Leningrad? Wow. Who wrote that stuff, and where did you find it?
Well, this was basically as part of the investigation that DiGenova did. There was a requirement that the Bush people turn over any documents that pertain to this issue. And so as part of that, the Bush campaign turned over the couple of pages of these zingers, that as they were called, to show that they were prepared to use this against Clinton during the debate. As it turned out, Bush did not use these zingers. He went into sort of a convoluted attack along these lines, and it kind of boomeranged on him, because Bill Clinton went back at him and said, compared him to his father, Prescott Bush, and said that back in the 50s, when Joe McCarthy was attacking people's patriotism, Prescott Bush had stood up to Senator McCarthy. But here, in this case, Bush Jr., in this case, or George H.W. Bush, wasn't doing the same thing as his father did. So it was kind of it ended up hurting the Bushes to some extent. But yes, they had prepared this material. I located it at the National Archives, along with the documents that were the background material that DiGenova's investigation had. And even though that investigation included interviews with Poppy Bush, where he effectively confessed, he basically said, yeah, I was sort of pushing my people to do this, DiGenova still concluded that nothing had happened.
Very interesting. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. We're talking about the breach of passport files, first to Barack Obama, three occasions, and at least one occasion each for Senator Clinton and Senator McCain. What are they after? And who is it that's after it? We'll continue in a moment. You got a question, comment? Call us now, toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
Do you want some some downtime, a break from work and worry without breaking the bank. At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. We're talking about the breaching of passport files in the State Department archives, the files of Barack Obama, three times they've been entered, plus the files of Senators McCain and Clinton, each accessed at least one time. And according to the Associated Press report here on Friday, the same person who breached Obama's passport file on March 14th and was disciplined also entered John McCain's file. That's according to State Department spokesperson Sean McCormick. Now, Robert Perry, there could be not necessarily innocent explanations, but non-political explanations. For example, someone may have gone in there looking for an awkward photograph of one of these candidates that they could then copy and post on eBay and try to make some money. Now that we know all three files were entered, that could be to misdirect an investigation to try to obscure what their original intentions were. But it's still a very unusual development, and we do have to look at the possible kind of dark political motives.
Right, although there could be relatively innocent motives. In one case, I was told that in the case of Hillary Clinton's file, it was more a trainee who was being told, well, you can put anybody's name in here and find something out, and she punched in Hillary Clinton. And her supervisor said, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
So sometimes it could be that sort of innocent mistake, or it could be someone's just personal curiosity to see what might be in there, or it could be someone who's looking to make some money, or it could be someone with a political agenda. So I think those are kind of the options. Since this is now much more electronic than it used to be in 1992,
Then
you had to go through paper. Now much of this is computerized, so it can be sent pretty quickly to somebody else once you were able to access it.
Well, and do you know if these files contain updated information on the travel activities of these individuals? Because, you know, I know every time I come into the country or leave, my passport is swiped through a scanner, a reader. And sometimes now they don't even bother to put a stamp on the physical passport, but you know once it is scanned that that contact with immigration is registered on a computer somewhere. What I don't know is if it actually goes into my personal file at the State Department.
It should. It should be. That should be something that would be part of this database. And that's part of what they're collecting as part of the efforts to deal with the war on terror. For instance, they've if you're a foreigner coming into the United States, you're fingerprinted, electronically fingerprinted, and your photo is taken, and your biometrics are, in that case, seized and stored by the United States government. It's a bit less intrusive for Americans, but we do have to go through a similar process, having photographs, and then when we go in and out of a country, they can keep track of that as well. So if a candidate had been going to a strange country, it possibly could be used against him, or suspicions could be raised that while he was there, maybe he met with somebody. So there are potential uses for this, but it is pretty sketchy information. So it's hard to see how it might be that useful.
Yeah, I can imagine they were trying to place Barack Obama in Prague at the time Mohammed Atta was not there.
They did place Bill Clinton in Prague, however, many, many years ago.
Right, yeah. Bob, I wanted to turn the subject a little bit to the whole process of accessing government information. As I mentioned, our next guest is David Westfall from McClatchy, and we're going to talk about Sunshine Week, which is an effort to expand legislation to preserve and expand the rights of reporters and others to get information from our government. This is one of the most secretive administrations in history. They have tried to tie up virtually everything, including presidential records, for a very long time. Tell me what your perspective is on openness in government, and if you could write some new legislation, what would you try to fix that you've been frustrated in your attempts to get info?
Well, one of the first things that George Bush did when he came into office in 2001 was to sign an executive order that stopped the scheduled release of information from the Reagan and Bush years. And those obviously were documents I had a lot of interest in because I'd covered that time frame. After 9/11, he actually increased this level of secrecy by saying that in the future, any release of those documents would require the approval of both the former president or vice president, the current president, and if the former president or vice president had died, his heirs would get the authority to block release of the documents. So it's made it very difficult to get documents that are fairly routine. I've tried to get documents out of the Bush 1 library in Texas, routine documents that should be available really within weeks, and it takes now months and months to do it, which is very disruptive to when you're trying to get stories done. You want to have all the information available, yet you can't get it, so you either put off a story or do a story without all the evidence you want. And that kind of reversing that would be very important.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Bob, thank you very much for joining us. Hope you get rid of that cold, and I'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Peter.
That's Robert Perry. Visit the website. A lot of great information at consortiumnews.com. As we mentioned, we're going to talk about Sunshine Week next. David Westfall of McClatchy's Washington Bureau will join us on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Emerson. Whatever the demand, whatever the challenge, with Emerson, you can consider it solved. I'm Charles Osgood. 3 years ago, the propeller of a hobby shop airplane sliced off one of Lee Spivak's fingertips. His brother Alan, a researcher in regenerative medicine, sent him a powder to sprinkle on it.
And I powdered it on until it was covered.
And lo and behold, the fingertip grew back.
Your finger grew back flesh, blood, vessels, and nail.
4 weeks.
In 4 weeks.
Right.
CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews has been working on a fascinating piece on regenerative medicine, growing body parts, for our TV broadcast this Sunday morning. More of what he's learned after this. With millions of new homes being built in China, finding an energy-responsible way of heating and cooling them becomes critical. That's why businesses turn to Emerson. Emerson accurately predicts what world trends mean for them, so Emerson can create the technologies that allow homeowners to cut energy usage and their electric bills. Emerson anticipates customers' needs, so when they're ready, Emerson's ready. Emerson, consider it solved.
Wine drinkers describe Pinot Noir in many ways.
Pinot Noir has such a wonderful, complex aroma.
It has a rich fruit character.
Now ask them to name their favorite Pinot Noir, and the response is surprisingly similar.
That's easy. It's Cabot.
Absolutely the Cabot Collection.
That's because Cabot Pinot Noir has a smooth taste that goes with so many foods. No wonder it's America's number one. So if you're looking for a Pinot Noir everyone agrees on, Cabot is the perfect choice.
The Cabot Collection, elevating life. Imported by Palm Bay International, Boca Raton, Florida.
The powder we were telling you about, as Dr. Stephen Badlick explained to Wyatt Andrews, is called extracellular matrix.
It tells the body, start that process of tissue regrowth.
If this helps Mr. Spivak's finger regrow, could you grow a whole limb?
In theory.
Dr. Anthony Atala and his colleagues at Wake Forest University have built 18 types of tissue, including muscle, whole organs, and the pulsing heart of a sheep.
And is it growing?
Absolutely. These cells are continuing to form new heart valve tissue. When people ask me, what do? We grow tissues and organs.
You really are making body parts.
We are making body parts that we can implant right back into patients.
The University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, adult stem cells are being injected into Beth Babo's heart. She and her surgeon, Dr. June Lee, hope to grow new arteries.
It's actually, what we would consider the holy grail of our field for coronary artery disease.
It's a big difference from open heart surgery to this. If people don't have to go through that, this would be the way to go if it works.
Dr. Steven Nickberger of the Tengion Corporation.
It is similar to the semiconductor industry of the 1980s. You don't know where it's going to go, but you know it's big.
Wyatt Andrews will tell you more about all this when I see you on the television this Sunday morning. The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Sorry about those skid marks. As we mentioned, next hour, David Iglesias will join us, a former U.S. attorney from New Mexico who was fired, he says, for political reasons, for declining to bring phony prosecutions of voter fraud because he said the cases simply wouldn't hold up in court. But Washington wanted him to pursue them anyway. And he, of course, is the one who got those inappropriate phone calls from New Mexico Senator Domenici and Congresswoman Heather Wilson. And she'll come up again in our third hour today about the vote-buying allegations against Congresswoman Wilson in a recent state Republican convention. Joining me now is David Westfall. He is the manager of the McClatchy Washington Bureau, and he's here to talk with us about openness in government and Sunshine Week, which is just about to come to a close. David, welcome back to our program today.
Thanks very much, Peter.
Nice to talk with you. And speaking of sunshine, we got lots of it here in California. It's just beautiful today. And I spent, the better part of the week in Washington, where it was pretty nice, and springtime is just starting to surface.
Yeah, it's sunny here, too. You know, it's about 50 degrees or something like that, so a little on the chilly side. But it's a beautiful late afternoon here.
I want to ask you first just about the state of newspapers and your situation in general. And keep in mind, David, that you're on the air in Sacramento, so the home office might be hearing you.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
But you've had a wild ride the last couple of years. You were running a shop called the Knight Ritter Washington Bureau, and Knight Ritter sold to the McClatchy chain, and McClatchy has hit its own hard times. The stock has been hammered, and like other newspapers, the paper is thinner, the staffs are being trimmed, and I'm just curious, you have a great operation there in Washington, and you also, based on the website, it appears you manage the foreign correspondents. Have you had to make any cutbacks recently?
Well, we haven't. We've been pretty steady in the almost 2 years that McClatchy has been involved now in the Knight Ritter acquisition, and we've been pretty much steady as you go. But I think it's certainly true that newspapers have been in for a tough patch here. In some respects, you know, newspapers in terms of their reach, combined reach with print and online combined, are doing better than ever, reaching more people. But of course, the advertising revenue has declined almost everywhere, and certainly that's been true for our company.
Yeah.
And our leadership believes that we'll weather this storm and we'll come out on the other side, in part because we're going to hang in there with covering the news the way we think it should be covered.
Now, Kevin Martin, the chair of the FCC, argued, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but when he rolled back the ban on newspaper television cross-ownership, he said he was trying to preserve newspapers. Now, that's a laudatory goal, but I don't think it's any part of the job description at the FCC. Is that kind of integration, in your view, essential to the survival of newsprint-based delivery?
Well, I don't really have a position on the whole FCC cross-ownership thing, and I'm involved in covering issues like that, so I shouldn't take positions. But I think that the whole question, or all of the questions involving the multi-platforms that news organizations are on, are a changing proposition. It used to be that newspapers and television stations, for example, competed head-up. One had a print product, one had the video. And now the competition, to some extent, is in the same medium, which is the Internet. So all of this is changing rapidly. I think it's in some respects hard to tell how it's going to emerge.
Well, and David, my biggest concern is preservation of enterprise reporting, because television and radio don't do it. They steal it from newspapers. And now that it's available on the web, they steal it from newspapers all over the country. They used to actually, you know, buy a copy and then liberally lift articles and quote it and make that the basis of their story assignments for the day. And if you take out newspapers, there isn't an equivalent. Blogs are interesting and bring a lot of voices and passion and specific subjects to millions of potential readers, but they're not edited, and many of them are not written by professionals. We can't rely on blogs as the way to bring up information about a city council that is in collusion with some local contractor, or, you know, problems in the local school system, or a pattern of crime that might develop in a certain geographical area. These are functions that newspapers have provided as a vital resource, and my fear is that as big shops like the L.A. Times trim down to almost half their size in terms of the newsroom 10 years ago, that we are missing out on coverage of stories, and it gets replaced with Spitzer Gate and, you know, Hollywood-based Britney Spears reporting and that kind of crap.
Well, you've made an argument that I often make pretty well, Peter. I think it is a concern, and you know, the bottom line is who will pay for the content? Who will pay for the content providers? The traditional relationship between advertising and information is breaking down a bit on the internet, at least to the extent, at least in the way that we've come to know it. And it is a concern. I think at the same time, I think companies like McClatchy do believe that we will survive the storm here, and we will survive in part by hanging in there with reporting the way it should be done. Mm-hmm. I also think that it's really too early to dismiss bloggers and citizen journalists and so on as being important parts of this equation. You mentioned David Iglesias, and that's a pretty good instance where a blogger, Josh Marshall, had an early role in raising questions about the firing of the U.S. attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then McClatchy and Marissa Taylor in particular from our bureau in Washington who came in right behind it with reporting from the states that really brought that story to light. So it's kind of an interesting situation there where you had both kinds of media involved in the reporting of that story.
Well, and to be clear, I'm not dismissive of bloggers, and Brad Friedman, I think, does excellent work. We feature him on our program every week. My point is that it's not, I don't think we can rely on bloggers to do the legwork that beat reporters have provided for decades in this country.
I agree completely, and you've seen already in a lot of different venues, state capitals, for example, a great decline in the number of reporters who are covering the state assemblies, the governor's offices, and here in Washington, a significant decline in the number of reporters who are hanging out in the various agencies, the Interior Department, the Department of Agriculture, Housing Department, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be a particularly good trend when it comes to providing the kind of information that people need.
David Westfall is with us, Washington editor for McClatchy Newspapers. And they have a website if you want to check it out, McClatchyDC.com. And there's some interesting information there. And particularly our Sacramento listeners who read the Bee on a daily basis, I think you might be interested to see the backbone there of the coverage that comes from Washington. I want to single out two reporters, Joe Galloway and Jonathan Landay. Both have been on this program, and they do excellent work in their respective areas, Galloway on the military and Landay on national security. And to your credit, David, McClatchy Newspapers have done a lot of breaking of big stories related to national security issues over the last few years, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. It is certainly an important focus that we have in our bureau here, and Joe Galloway, who's now a columnist, and as well as Jonathan Landay, who remains with the McClatchy Bureau as a national security reporter, are both outstanding journalists, and both have done a terrific job at finding out things that other people haven't found out, and going with their great reporting instincts.
Got a caller. Julie in Sacramento has a comment. Julie, welcome to the program with David Westfall.
Thank you. Hi, David.
Hi.
And Mr. Peter B.
Welcome.
I have a question on the two federal prosecutors that were found dead of natural causes that were prosecuting the Medicare fraud against GE and the major drug companies. And after their deaths, all the evidence disappeared, and the attorney for GE and the major drug companies was Alberto Gonzalez. And when I called the local bureau here, they said that they would have to refer it, every time they always refer it to the Washington Bureau. And I've never heard, I've never read anything about that. Do you have any idea when you might be able to put something like that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Julie, thank you. Go ahead, David.
Well, I appreciate the question, and to be honest with you, I'm not completely familiar with that case. I do know a little, just a little bit about it, but I don't know the inner workings of it. It brings up an interesting point. The McClatchy Washington Bureau is one of the larger bureaus in Washington, and yet it's not the size of the New York Times, not the size of the Associated Press, and we don't attempt to cover every story. We wish we could, but we don't. We're not of that size, and we have to pick and choose stories that we cover and areas that we areas of expertise that we like to develop. So, our mission is to spot what we think are often undercover stories, and this may well be one of them, but it's not one that we've reported on to date.
So we're at the final few days of Sunshine Week, and if people want to find out some information about this, go to sunshineweek.org. I think you and I spoke last year just about this time. And David, would you say that things have opened up or closed down more over just the last 12-month period?
Well, some interesting trends there. I think the news media and others who are advocates of open government had a big success at the end of the year in passage of the Open Government Act, which strengthens the government's responsibility to respond to citizen requests, reporter requests as well, for information under the Freedom of Information Act. So after a long period of struggling, the advocates of open government feel pretty good about coming up with a victory. Congress passed this. President Bush signed it.
Mm-hmm.
So an important victory there. And Peter also wanted to mention that the poll that came out last Sunday by Scripps Howard showed an interesting awareness on the part of the public about secrecy. We now have three-fourths of Americans who believe the federal government is somewhat or very secretive, mm-hmm. and that number has been going up every year for the last 3 years. So,
And I'm looking at the survey now, too. Let's just recap, too. They think that local government is more open. Only 40% say that it is somewhat or very secretive compared to 74% at the federal government level. So that's kind of interesting because I don't think it's always the case. local governments can get away with things. State government is often beyond the reach of most people and kind of operates in a murky netherworld that only affects you when you have to pay taxes or go to the DMV or something like that. So I think that's interesting. Here's another question that was asked. Does the government spy on the public? And the question that's posed was, has the federal government opened mail, monitored phone calls of people in the U.S. without asking a federal judge? And 77% say very likely or somewhat likely. So that shows the kind of distrust that has grown, and I think that's highly warranted. I think it's true that a lot of our communications are being intercepted. Anything else in this survey that popped up that intrigued you, David?
Yes, there were a couple of things that caught my eye. One is there is something like 90% plus agreement that candidates for federal, state, and local governments should take stands in defense of open government. So there's this very, very strong a reservoir of support for the idea of open government. And I also in the instance of some specifics, for example, there's often controversy when newspapers list those who have permits to carry concealed handguns, and there's some opposition to the idea that these should be publicized. But in this poll, two-thirds of the respondents said that state governments should allow the public to see who has been given a permit to carry a concealed handgun.
And I'm not sure if this has drifted as far as Washington, but there was quite a protest at the Sacramento Bee recently because the paper published detailed information about the incomes, including overtime and bonuses, for state employees. And some state employees complained that it made them targets of ex-spouses or others who might want a piece of that money.
I did see that. Very interesting reaction.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with David Westfall. More of your calls in a moment, too, at 888-5-PETER-B. Visit the website sunshineweek.org. Our guest, David Westfall, is the D.C. editor for McClatchy Newspapers and also co-chair of the American Society of Newspaper Editors Freedom of Information Committee. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
We continue on the Peter B. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour, and I just noted that Arcata, California issued a proclamation joining in Sunshine Week and honoring the League of Women Voters of Humboldt County for their efforts to bring more openness to government in the northern reaches of California. A lot of great activists in Humboldt County. happy to honor you. We continue now with David Westfall. He is the Washington editor for McClatchy Newspapers, and he's the co-chair of the newspaper group's committee on openness and these issues. And David, I'd like to ask you about Sunshine in a particular case. And this has to do with Sybelle Edmonds. You're probably familiar with her story. She worked at the FBI and was fired and has become a whistleblower who's leveled charges. And the Ashcroft Attorney General era named her as they put a gag order on her under the so-called state secrets privilege. And a few months back, the Times of London ran a series of articles based on information cited to Ms. Edmonds. And there have been just modest pickups here in the United States. I think an Arizona newspaper and a conservative magazine have published information sourced to the Times of London. I'm just wondering if you've looked at this and how you navigate this this claim of a state secret privilege, which is very murky, is not based on statute, it's based on precedent.
Well, it's very, very difficult territory. We have not, to my knowledge, we have not looked into this beyond observing the story. It may well be something we should look into. I think that this territory is one of the most difficult for any reporter to navigate, and the concerns about whether they're officially state secrets or simply information that the administration, the Defense Department, the FBI, whomever, mm-hmm. Declares it would be injurious to the government, and injurious to national security or whatever, causes very, very difficult questions, ethical questions, really, for reporters. And they've been coming up, of course, in this era of terrorism. Post 9/11 era, they've been coming up much more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it has to do with NSA snooping on phone calls, whether it has to do with secret prisons,
mm-hmm.
Whether it has to do with some other story that we don't even know about yet, because editors and reporters have not made the decision yet whether to publish information. Very, very, very difficult questions. To me, in the end, it's the very rare case that should remain bottled up.
Yeah.
But there are those, and editors take these questions and decisions very, very, very seriously.
Well, I would imagine the legal counsel at McClatchy Newspapers takes them very seriously, too.
Of course, of course. But, you know, it's interesting. These usually don't come down to legal questions. They come down to sort of a practical call. Is this in fact going to endanger someone? Is this going to harm national security? Is this going to be an undue invasion of privacy? It's usually not a legal question.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Mike in Fair Oaks listening on KSAC. Welcome. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with David Westfall.
Good evening, David and
Hi.
Peter. Fascinating discussion. I live in Sacramento, and I'll go back many years. The Union and the Bee. To give you a little perspective, as a reader of both of those and the Sacramento News and Review, we're very limited in the information we get. I no longer subscribe to the Bee for a number of reasons, but I really appreciate your discussions today.
And Mike, go ahead, tell us why you dropped the B.
Well, specifically people like David Whitney, who I've had tried to have conversations with and really define most of what he contributes to the B as being nowhere near what we out here need to know about what's going on in Washington, D.C.
What would you like to know?
Well, I'd like to know a lot more of the details about and the truth about what my representatives are doing and not doing, what they're involved with. For example, Dan Lundgren, and I'm in his district.
Okay, his name's Lundgren. Let's get that
Lundgren,
right.
Excuse me. And specifically, I'd like to get into the meat of, for example, why he stood on his crutch the other day, pushing the Bush regime point in the debate on the House floor regarding the FISA bill.
Mm-hmm.
What really was behind all of that? I find myself sometimes wanting to see the old union again.
Oh, I shudder to think. Just about 30 seconds, David. Give him a response.
Well, one answer is that almost all Republicans, and perhaps all Republicans for that matter, are standing with the president and Congressman Lundgren in support of the FISA bill. So, one quick answer is that every Republican is doing this. But I agree with you that we have a responsibility to be specific about what the local members of Congress are supporting and not supporting.
David Westfall, you work on it, and Mike, buy the paper once in a while and check in on them, okay?
All right, yeah. Okay.
How's that for a compromise? I'm Peter B. Collins. More coming up. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Snoops at the State Department.
A probe into a security breach involving the passports of the major presidential contenders is growing. I'm Sam Litzinger.
And Bill Richardson makes his pick.
I am very proud today to endorse your candidacy for president.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Jim Taylor. Passport file snooping, a scandal at the State Department as passport files of three presidential candidates are violated.
The State Department's Inspector General is looking into the security breach. Spokesman Sean McCormick says department employees snooped through the candidates' passport files and the problem should have been dealt with at the highest levels right away.
The information didn't flow up. Frankly, we should have known about these unauthorized accesses when they happened. Senior management of the department.
Two workers have already been fired. Secretary of State Rice has told Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain she's sorry. McCain says it's a serious matter.
The United States of America values everyone's privacy, and corrective action should be taken.
Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
Senator Barack Obama, the first candidate to learn of the transgressions.
I expect a full and thorough investigation. I think that it should be done in conjunction with those congressional committees that have oversight so that it is not simply an internal matter.
Now this.
Buying a used car can be a roller coaster ride. Are you getting the car you think you're getting, or are you just being taken for a ride? Listen closely. Honda certified used cars. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low APR financing on all Odyssey, Pilot, and S2000 certified used Honda models. Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
Wondering when it's the right time for service? Your Hummer knows. With Oil Life Monitor, OnStar Vehicle Diagnostics, and a complete service schedule in every owner's manual. And when it's time, head down the Goodwrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Goodwrench multi-point vehicle inspection.
I can't stop thinking about it.
See your Hummer Goodwrench dealer today or log on to Goodwrench.com. Diagnostic capabilities vary by model. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Goodwrench and go. We're keeping it simple.
Bill Richardson gives it up, his endorsement for president.
Barack Obama, you're a leader who has shown courage, judgment, and wisdom throughout the years. You understand the security challenges of the 21st century, and you will be an outstanding commander-in-chief.
As the only Hispanic governor in the nation, Richardson's endorsement eagerly sought by both the Clinton and Obama campaigns, standing with Barack Obama today
As a Hispanic American, I was particularly touched by his words.
University of Virginia political scientist Larry Sabato.
It's significant mainly because Richardson is a national leader of Hispanics and Latinos, and that has been a group that has been very difficult for Obama to secure.
Here's a sound being heard from the northern plains to the northeast tip of the United States.
Even though yesterday was the first day of spring, we're still in the middle of winter.
Ginny Joel's Maine Public Service Company.
We've received record snowfall as of midnight last night, somewhat over 182 inches of snow.
Which is why in Caribou, Maine, people are staying put.
Any road headed out of town is complete whiteout condition.
Kurt Violet, he owns Napoli's Italian restaurant, downtown Caribou.
It is a complete blizzard. We are having almost 50-mile-an-hour winds. We got 12 inches of snow yesterday, and they're expecting another 5 inches from what I hear.
Where it is not cold enough to snow, a lot of rainfall across the country, a lot of flooding, homes underwater in Eureka, Missouri.
This is my home. And, it used to be. I'm not sure. I think we'll be looking for a new one after this.
Tommy Jackson is the emergency management director at Little Rock, Arkansas.
We have had numerous reports of homes falling right into the water, homes floating downstream. Cars have been swept away.
Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport shut down for hours by bad weather. 350 flights canceled at Chicago's O'Hare. The mayor of New York is calling it a tragedy in the making. Wisconsin company's new marketing scheme selling kits to paint guns in bright rainbow colors. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, angrily banning the kits a couple of years ago, said cops couldn't tell if they were toy guns or real guns. Now Lauer Custom Weaponry, out with what it calls the Bloomberg Collection, includes a stencil of the mayor's face on the barrel of the gun. Comes in a variety of colors. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Ace Hardware wants to make your spring spectacular with expert help, friendly advice, and great ways to save on all your jobs around the house. Like a Rubbermaid corner tool rack for $9.99. For a simple start and a fabulous finish, pick up a gallon of Ace Royal paint at its everyday low price. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn 10 points for every dollar you spend. But don't wait, because the sale ends Monday at Ace, the helpful place.
Price is good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Strange story of death in the Florida Keys. The tourist sitting in the front of a pleasure boat zipping along.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Coming up next hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, Brad Friedman from Brad Blog will be with us. One of the names that will come up is Congresswoman Heather Wilson, a Republican from New Mexico. And I think it's likely her name is going to come up this hour, too. As we are joined by David Iglesias, the former U.S. attorney for New Mexico, who was one of the U.S. attorneys who was fired by the Bush administration, many believed, including Mr. Iglesias, for political reasons. And these were the issues that led to the amnesia under oath of our former Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez. And we have our official Gonzalez testimony theme music for you.
Senator, I was at the meeting. I just can't recall. They gave me a list, and I think I looked at it.
David, David Iglesias was born in Panama City and came to the United States in his youth, went to Santa Fe High School, got his bachelor's degree at Wheaton College in Illinois, his J.D. from the University of New Mexico. He served in the United States Navy, rising to the rank of commander, and more importantly, I think, was also a member of the Judge Advocate General Corps, a JAG, and I think that that's one reason that the Bush administration picked the wrong guy to fire. He was a political independent during his college days, then became a Republican, and among other things, he ran for Attorney General of New Mexico in 1998, lost narrowly to Patricia Madrid, and then served as a White House fellow, and apparently that led to his appointment as U.S. Attorney. David Iglesias, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I do want to mention that you have a book that will be out shortly called Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration, and I certainly look forward to that. Tell me just what your feelings are today, and how broad was the politicization of the office that you held? There's some 92 U.S. attorneys in office around the country. And to what extent did you become concerned that political influence was overcoming the standards of justice at the Justice Department?
I'll see if I can remember all those questions. I first had an inkling about the politicization of the Justice Department once I was in contact with John McKay, the former U.S. attorney in Seattle, and some of the other colleagues in December of 2006. Within about 2 weeks of our infamous phone call from Maine Justice, we were able to figure out there were at least six of us that had been pushed out at the same time. Turns out there were a total of nine that were asked to leave for improper political reasons. That flies in the face of almost 200 years of history in terms of administrations, both Republican and Democrat, leaving their U.S. attorneys alone. I mean, that's one of the things that sets this country apart from other countries is we don't mix politics with prosecutions. We indict people based on evidence and based on the law. And one of the cardinal rules of our criminal justice system, especially at the federal level, is that the prosecutor is independent. He or she shouldn't take calls from members of other branches of government to influence them to do anything. So I first suspected in December, and as the evidence rolled out, it took my breath away. I had no idea at all these other examples of politicization that were going on, such as hiring people using political type questions, which is absolutely prohibited, mm-hmm. violates federal law.
That came out in the testimony of Monica Goodling, who was, shall we say, not so stellar qualified legal scholar from Regent University, who was put in a very powerful position in the Ashcroft Justice Department.
Well, she was in over her head, and I really like what Slate.com said recently, said that there were toddlers running the Justice Department in 2006. I think that's humorous, but it's also pretty accurate. For some reason, and since the White House is currently withholding lots of evidence that they've not produced to the House of Representatives, we don't really know exactly what role Karl Rove played, but I do talk about all roads leading to Rove in my book, and I believe that once the evidence is completely out, you'll see some pretty nasty political fingerprints over our ouster and other related Justice Department issues.
Mm-hmm. David Iglesias, we're with us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll take your calls a little later if you wish to talk with him at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, let's go back to the fall of 2006, just prior to the November midterm elections. Heather Wilson, a Republican congresswoman from New Mexico, was in a very tight race. In fact, was she running against Patricia Madrid, who had defeated you?
Yes, it's a very small political circle here in New Mexico. I think we have fewer people than live in the entire Bay Area. I think we have about 2 million people here. Yes, Patsy Madrid beat me let's see, 48.5 to 51.5 back in 1998. And then she ended up losing to Heather Wilson by about 800 and some odd votes. So it was extremely close.
Okay, so you got a call from Heather Wilson and also one from Pete Domenici. And from all I've read, David Iglesias, it seems that at least Ms. Wilson was civil, or she didn't hang up on you, to my knowledge.
Correct. Replay
those two phone calls, if you would.
Yes, Heather, who I'd known since 1998, because we actually campaigned together. Her first election was my first and only run at office. So she called me in mid-October asking about sealed indictments. Evidently, there was word on the street here in New Mexico that I was withholding a prosecution against a powerful former Democrat, former President Pro Tem of our state Senate here. I was waiting to do that until after the election cycle. Well, you know, she wanted me to talk to her about that, and I evaded her question because prosecutors are absolutely prohibited from talking about sealed indictments.
And give me an idea. Did you try to deflect it? Did you make a joke? Did you talk sports? Did you say, oh, Heather, how could you ask me that?
Here's what I did, Peter. I said, well, we can sometimes seal indictments if it involves a matter of national security or if it involves a juvenile. But I didn't respond at all to anything related to Manny Aragon, who she was fishing around about. What you have to understand is in the context of her race against Patricia Madrid, she was, at the time of the phone call, either in a dead heat or actually behind. She was the incumbent, Heather Wilson was. And she'd made a point of Patricia Madrid not filing any corruption cases, of being asleep at the wheel. So any information I could have given her, she could have used in saying, well, the federal government is filing all these corruption cases, and Patricia Madrid is not, and she wants to be your congresswoman.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I saw through that right away. I didn't give her what she wanted. She didn't threaten me. She didn't hang up the phone. Unlike Senator Pete Domenici, who had been my mentor, he had sponsored me to get my U.S. attorney position back in 2001. And that was the worst phone call that I've ever gotten in my life. That was a couple of weeks later, in October of 2006.
And how did that call begin, and how did it abruptly end?
Well, I was sitting in my bedroom. I was in my house, and I got a call, and it was his chief of staff, a guy named Steve Bell, who had told me that he had heard complaints about me from constituents. And then he passed the phone over to Senator Pete Domenici, who wanted to find out when I was going to be filing these corruption cases or corruption matters that he'd been reading about. And he wanted to know if they'd be filed before November. And I told him I didn't think so. I tried to dodge and wiggle, fudge a little bit there.
And even in saying that, you were skirting up right against the line, weren't you?
That was right up against the line. I mean, I should have just said absolutely nothing, or I should have said, Senator, can't talk about it. At the time, I had political aspirations. I figured I'd go right to the line, and hopefully he wouldn't press me for any details.
Mm-hmm.
What he did is he said, I'm very sorry to hear that, and then he hung up on me.
No epithets or name-calling? Just
no.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Just abrupt.
But I had that kick in the gut feeling after he'd called me thinking something very bad had just happened.
And did you ever have, if he was your mentor, had you ever had any other chilled conversations with him where he expressed anger or disappointment in you?
Not at all. In fact, he helped craft some legislation to fix an Indian country jurisdictional problem that we had had here in New Mexico. I'd probably talked to him a total of 3 or 4 times over the course of 5 years. It had always been civil. It had been appropriate, with one exception, which I talk about in my book.
Mm-hmm. All right. David Iglesias is with us. We're going to take a break right now and return, and I want to talk about the overarching issues of voter fraud and election fraud and the way the Bush Justice Department made such a big deal out of prosecuting voter fraud, even though we've seen that it is a minimalist problem to begin with. And in recent Supreme Court arguments about voter ID laws in Indiana, they could not present a single case of voter fraud that required a photo ID. It's a solution in search of a problem. We'll pick up there as we continue and take your calls too at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
We'll be right back. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super green nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey and Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain in your body. With six professionals, two doctors of osteopathy on duty, Cornerstone offers hormone balancing for men and women, all natural, no side effects. With our bodies filled with toxins and aches and pains, this approach works. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic neck pain for years. Trina Hammack uses a technique called quantum biofeedback, which to me is a miracle. I feel better and better each day, physically and mentally. Cornerstone offers lymphatic drainage, infrared saunas, ionic foot baths, massage, estheticians, and body strengthening specifically for your body so you'll start living pain-free naturally. Tired of taking medicine? Homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils are used. Finally, an alternative that works. Cornerstone Wellness Center, 1088 Cass Street, Monterey. Call today, 373-6204, 373-6204.
Good morning. I'm Diane with a final look at KRXA traffic. In Gilroy, Mastin Avenue, this is east of northbound 101. Fire crews en route to check up on some smoke reported in the area. This may actually just be an overactive chimney, but again, it's a bit of a visual hazard as you drive along 101 because you can see the smoke. So again, this is Mastin Avenue, just east of northbound 101. Northbound 101 actually already slow on your ride up from Gilroy through Morgan Hill and into South San Jose. Highway 17, both directions through Santa Cruz Mountains. That's looking good. No stalls, no accidents. Northbound, though, you get your usual bunch up right about towards the summit. And 25, you're staring at brake lights on your ride from Hollister to Gilroy. Traffic, it is brought to you by Carfax. The flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb. Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Want to avoid them? Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Taking a look at your Monterey Bay weather by afternoon time, it's going to be mostly sunny skies. Temperatures reaching the low 60s. Monterey, a little bit cooler. You know we always got that extra layer. So it is 43 degrees in Monterey, 45 in Santa Cruz. Stay tuned for the KRXA Morning Show with Hal and Roshi.
right. You can't get what you want.
Until you know what you want.
Until you know what you want. That's Joe Jackson. And David Iglesias with us, former U.S. attorney for New Mexico, fired with others, we believe, for political reasons by the Justice Department. Alberto Gonzalez signed off on them, but in the testimony before Congress, he could not recall the details, how it all happened, who brought him the list, and that process. And David Iglesias, in your new book called Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration, I haven't seen it, but our mutual friend, or at least we both know, Jason Leopold, the reporter,
yes.
He has read the book, and he wrote a great piece about it that's available at consortiumnews.com. And it says that you have a chapter in the book called Caged. And before we dive into this, let me just stipulate that voter fraud, in my dictionary, is when an individual fraudulently registers or casts a vote by using someone else's name, forging an identity, or misrepresenting where they live or their general eligibility to vote. And election fraud is when those who control the election process and the system of casting, counting, and tabulating votes manipulate the system for a particular gain. So with that in mind, what was the pressure on you to bring voter fraud cases in New Mexico?
Yes, let me just give you a little context. New Mexico was the closest margin of loss to President Bush back in 2000. He lost the state by about 350 votes to Al Gore. So the Republicans here were convinced there was massive election fraud going on. And
can we be specific? They thought it was massive voter fraud, right?
They thought there was lots. Right. Bottom line, they thought there were lots of people voting who had no legal right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So, in 2002, the Justice Department sent out an email to every United States attorney, all 93 of us, saying, "Please work with your local secretaries of states, with your voting officials, to see if you can find prosecutable cases." I just thought that was just the normal modus operandi of the Justice Department.
So was it similar to a memo about we're emphasizing child pornography, we're going after meth dealers? I mean, were there a series of bulletins where they informed you about what the priorities were of the Attorney General?
Yes. And, you know, we got these in 2002, 2004, and 2006. So I dutifully contacted our Secretary of State and worked with her in 2002. There was no sense back in 2002 that was a problem. Voter fraud was a problem. But in the summer of 2004, there was significant local media interest and coverage on what appeared to be voter fraud, and lots of it. So I convened a election fraud task force comprised of state, local, and federal law enforcement, both Democrats and Republicans, because I wanted there to be confidence by the public that this wasn't some type of Republican witch hunt, not realizing that, in fact, there was a witch hunt going on, and I was part of it, but I didn't know that at the time. So we set up a toll-free number, and it rang into the local FBI and worked with the state police, and they investigated what appeared to be state violations of law, and I worked on the federal side. Well, at the end of almost 2 years, we only had one case that possibly had merit in it, and in the final conclusion, not only me, but of the Justice Department and of the local FBI office, we didn't have a prosecutable case.
And that was out of some 108 referrals that potentially could have led to a prosecution.
Of some type, whether it was state or federal.
Understood.
Right. And I was convinced at the beginning of this task force that there would be a significant number of cases. My office had last prosecuted a case involving voter fraud in 1992, and I was convinced it was out there. I wanted to prosecute those cases, but a legitimate prosecutor doesn't make up evidence. I mean, we had one weak case which we felt we could not prove, so I didn't authorize the filing of any voter fraud cases, and the estate didn't either. Now, the pressure comes in when I was emailed and had phone calls left on my old office phone by local members of the Republican Party, including a former general counsel, a guy named Pat Rogers, who I later found out was highly involved in this very suspect group called the ACVR, mm-hmm. the American Center for Voting Rights.
That's Thor Hearn's group out of Missouri.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept telling Mr. Rogers, look, if I have a prosecutable case, I'll prosecute it. If I don't, I won't. And I had a career prosecutor that I trusted a lot work the cases for me, although I did specifically talk to the FBI agent myself. I looked at the reports, looked at the evidence personally, and just had no prosecutable case. So there was direct pressure put on by state party operatives for me to find cases and prosecute it. And I later found out that that was one of the basis for my removal, was I wasn't aggressive enough in prosecuting voter fraud cases, even though I was only one of two U.S. attorneys in the entire country that even set up an election fraud or voter fraud task force.
David Iglesias with us. We're going to a break. Just quickly now, when was the first time you heard the term caging?
That would have been last summer, summer of 2007.
All right, we're going to explore that as we continue with David Iglesias, the former U.S. attorney for New Mexico. We're talking about his dismissal and the politicization of the U.S. attorney offices of the Justice Department. Lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, unindicted to date, Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Beware Easter. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The Barack Obama preacher controversy reminds us just how risky it can be to listen to preachers.
Did I ever hear him make remarks that could be considered controversial while I sat in the church? Yes.
And because he didn't stand up and walk out, it could only have meant one thing, that he took the words of his pastor literally. So with that in mind, I want to warn you all, this Sunday is Easter, and a lot of you will be going to church you haven't been in some time. You may hear some controversial things. For example, it turns out that a person named Jesus, who had been executed by the government for claiming to be God, rose from the dead. In fact, he was not only dead, but buried until on his third day in the tomb, he was able to roll back the stone and walk out under his own power. But that's not the half of it. Because he did this, many Christian pastors, except the Unitarians, will tell you that you can do the same thing, as in rise from the dead. I just want to point out that this does not mean you shouldn't still look both ways when crossing the street. Also, some preachers will point out that God is more powerful than any earthly government, even the United States, and that because God is superior to every earthly government, if it comes to a choice between what your government says and what God says, you have to obey God. However, this does not mean you can just park anywhere. So be careful this Sunday. And I'll be back in December to warn you about another controversial sermon which involves teens getting pregnant without understanding how it happened. Now this.
Check this out. Hello there. How are you doing? Have you met my friend Bill yet?
Why is there some guy on the back of your bike winking at me?
Oh, that's my wingman. I saved so much money on motorcycle insurance by switching to Geico. I rented a wingman.
He has two tickets to paradise and needs a travel companion.
Hey, he is good.
Saving you money on your motorcycle insurance is our business. What you do with the money is your business.
Oh, yeah.
Geico Motorcycle. Let's ride.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
March Madness has struck all-class transportation in Marina. Through March 29th, all-class transportation is offering ridiculously low rates to travel in the ultimate in comfort and style. Rent an all-class transportation 8-passenger limousine for the bargain basement price of $55 an hour. A 6-passenger luxury SUV goes for just $50 an hour. And you can enjoy the plush surroundings of a 4-passenger luxury sedan for the low, low price of $45 per hour. The minimum rental time, just 1 hour. Call All Class Transportation, TCP number 22978-A at 831-582-9338 or email John and John at allclasstrans@att.net. Times are yard to yard. Gratuity is not included, and vehicles will be rented subject to availability. Remember, for all your transportation needs, call Marina-based All Class Transportation at 582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Thank you.
Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates, especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast, professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a knotty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We are talking with former Republican U.S. Attorney David Iglesias. He served in the district of the state of New Mexico. He was one of those fired for political reasons by the Bush administration. That's what we're exploring this hour. Robert Cray has a has an opinion about lawyers. David Iglesias, as I mentioned before the break, the term caging or vote caging appears to be central to the overarching plan here to fight voter fraud while pursuing, in my view, election fraud. And as you pointed out, New Mexico was a pivotal state, and Bush lost it by just a few hundred votes in 2000. And, of course, that was an election so tight that the Supreme Court ultimately decided it. And we just learned about this term. It originally came out in the one of the House judiciary hearings regarding the U.S. attorney issues. And I think it was Monica Goodling who blurted it out in a response to a question from Congresswoman Linda Sanchez of Orange County, California. And then there wasn't much follow-up. It didn't appear that the members of the committee really knew what it meant or what it referred to and how it really is the key to at least one layer of this complicated story. So vote caging, by the way, here's a quick definition, is an illegal tactic to suppress minorities or others from voting by having their names purged from voter rolls when they fail to respond to registered mail sent to their homes. And it appears that the Republicans, and we have to attribute this to the architect, Karl Rove, had a scheme to try to get voters off the rolls who would be most likely to vote for Democrats. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a despicable practice.
And so what did it mean to you when you first heard it, and how did you connect it to the pressure that had been put on you to bring these prosecutions that you regarded as phony?
Well, I wasn't aware of any voting caging going on in my district, but I did find out afterward that there were districts, especially in Missouri, for example, Florida, and I'm a military reservist, and I found out that there were some voter registration sent to service members in Jacksonville who were overseas fighting. And these were typical lower-level enlisted folks who tended to be minorities. And the practice there was to get them off the rolls, even though they were overseas fighting for the right for all of us to vote. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just unconscionable, that my party would stoop to such you know, despicable practices. The irony, too, Peter, is the guy who took Bud Cummings' place in Arkansas was a well-known vote cager, and had practiced that.
That's Tim Griffin, a crony of Karl Rove's.
That's correct. So, I found out after leaving the Justice Department that voter caging was, in fact, going on. that it was part and parcel of the plan to try to maintain a permanent Republican majority, mm-hmm. which in my view is as elusive as chasing after the Holy Grail.
Well, let me, you wouldn't let me, but I don't want to attempt to put words in your mouth. But let me ask you just how far-reaching you think this is, because Monica Goodling and Karl Rove had weekly Wednesday meetings at the White House to discuss U.S. attorney nominations and federal bench of federal court judge, mostly lifetime appointment nominations. And certainly some of this can be routine, and it's part of the administration's job. These posts open up, and they have to fill them. But I think there was a conscious effort to pack the courts, not only with hardline conservatives, but with people who would proverbially carry water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's probably right, Peter. The thing that your listeners have to realize is judges and U.S. attorneys get their appointments through the political process. I doubt I would have got my appointment had I not run for state attorney general as a Republican. But what they also have to keep in mind is once in office, judges and U.S. attorneys are required to stay out of political processes. We're required to stay out of politics or risk losing our jobs.
And so this created conflicts. And now let me ask you into another area that certainly involves speculation. We know that 9 U.S. attorneys were dismissed. We know that at least one of them, Kevin Ryan in San Francisco, was regarded by members of both parties to be less than competent. But in the others, you can find direct, plausible cases of, I'm trying to think of the legal term here, circumstantial evidence. Carol Lamb, in particular, in San Diego, had prosecuted Duke Cunningham and had just notified a justice in Washington that she was planning to go after the very powerful Republican Congressman Jerry Lewis. And her dismissal came down the pipeline shortly thereafter. And one of the things that we have to look at is the flip side, which is what did those who held on to their jobs do to preserve them?
That's right. Well, it creates this negative inference that if you stayed on, you're a political hack. I don't happen to believe that. I mean, there may be some isolated cases of U.S. attorneys that stayed on that did violate their sacred trust of nonpartisan and independent prosecutions. But I think as a whole, Peter, that most were not presented that terrible, you know, Hobson's choice. I do know that of the 9 of us that were fired, there is a lot of circumstantial evidence. There are trends, such as John McKay in Seattle refused to indict folks related to the recount of their governor up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he got crosswise with the right wing of the party. And John was forced out. Paul Charlton was investigating Republican Congressman Rick Renzi. And and Paul was asked to step down.
And Renzi has been indicted on multiple counts.
That's exactly right. Carol, I think you've already talked about Duke Cunningham, and also remember she indicted the number 3 at the CIA, Dusty Fogo, who was a Republican appointee.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put all those trends together, and then you add what happened to Bud Cummings, who was just moved aside because Karl Rove wanted to put his golden child in there for a couple of years to pad his resume. I mean, it's a very ugly picture that's painted.
Matt in Sacramento joins us with a question for David Iglesias. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was curious about two things, and maybe you've already answered it. But one was, are there any prosecutions, seeing as how apparently they felt like there was something there that occurred after you were removed?
Okay, I'm not sure. I'm following your question, Matt.
I think he's referring to voter fraud cases in New Mexico.
The type of thing that they seem to be so interested in. And I'm an ex-Republican, so this bothers me like it bothers you.
Yeah, because that's not what the party stands for, winning at any cost. No, there have been no election fraud or voter fraud prosecutions since I left office over a year ago.
Well, that should clear you. So, anyway, God bless, and I sure appreciate what you did.
Thank you, Matt.
Sir.
Appreciate your comment. Now, David Iglesias, you mentioned that you're in the Navy Reserve, and I mentioned that you served at the rank of commander and also as a judge advocate general. And this plays into one of the possible motives for your dismissal, or at least something that was cited in some of the commentary that surfaced when you and others who had been dismissed pushed back when Gonzalez asserted that they were for performance reasons. And one of the theories that I believe you've been pursuing but blocked by a fellow named, oh, pardon me, Scott Block, that was an unintentional use of the verb, it's called the office professional responsibility. Is that right?
Well, it's actually the Office of Special Counsel is looking into possible employment discrimination based on my reserve status.
Okay, and explain how that came about.
Special Counsel is authorized to enforce the federal law against violating federal agencies. I mean, I know your listeners may find this hard to believe, but federal agencies sometimes violate federal law. So Office of Special Counsel, or OSC, is empowered to investigate and bring enforcement actions. So because I was called an absentee landlord, and I think that relates directly to me being gone approximately 35 to 45 days per year on military duty, that refers to my military status. So I authorize OSC to investigate. And right now they're being blocked by the Justice Department. The Justice Department is telling OSC, stand in line, take a ticket. We'll get to you once we're done with our internal investigation.
And do you think the operative instructions here were blurted out by Kyle Sampson when he said, he was quoted as saying, and this related to that clause in the renewal of the Patriot Act that permitted them to appoint U.S. attorneys without Senate confirmation. And he said, well, you know, we'll gum it to death and run out the clock.
Yeah, and then that was remarkably candid, and that was also remarkably unwise to put that in an email, since email lasts forever. Yeah, what he referred to is the Patriot Act was anti-terrorism legislation. When it was up for renewal, what they did is they added a section that none of us knew about that said that the administration could put in an interim U.S. attorney without Senate confirmation. And Senator Pryor from Arkansas first found out about it. And once they found out that this had been an end around the constitutional requirement of the Senate confirming high-level Justice Department folks, they really were upset about that, and rightfully so.
David Iglesias, what is your perception of the case of Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, who's now serving a 6 or 7 year federal sentence, and the prosecution there is riddled with apparent conflicts, and they relate to Karl Rove and his friendship with a husband and wife team. The husband has been, this is Canary, the husband has been on political campaigns with Karl Rove for the last 15 years, and his wife got appointed U.S. attorney in Alabama. And then there was this prosecution with a lot of significant questions of Siegelman, and it really looks like a wired job.
It, you know, I have to be honest with you, Peter. I've not been following it that carefully, but from what I've read, there is ample grounds for appeal, and it would appear that that there were this was a politically driven prosecution. And I hope on appeal he gets out of prison, because it would appear this is the type of case that DOJ typically did not prosecute, and there was a political basis for it.
Mm-hmm. One of my listeners who couldn't stay on the line raised a question about two of your U.S. attorney colleagues who died presumably of natural causes. Do you have any questions about the way their lives ended, and if that could be an extension of this this politicization?
Oh, gosh. Well, I know of one. That was my good friend Mike Shelby in Houston, who died of bone cancer. So I have no doubt that that was a natural cause. I'm not sure who the second U.S. attorney was.
Okay, and I'm not familiar with her details either. Okay, one other item I wanted to ask you about, and then we'll take a break and take some phone calls in the final segment of the hour here. This regards Heather Wilson, who we touched on earlier. And as I mentioned, next hour we're going to discuss the current problems she's facing, allegations that she paid people to show up at Republican caucuses to elect delegates to the state convention. And we have the testimony of your former governor, Republican Dave Cargo, who joined us on the program here a couple of weeks ago. What is your sense of Heather Wilson's credibility, and what do you make of these recent allegations?
Well, regarding Heather's credibility, it's I just don't think it's there. She she stated when she announced she's running for Senate that her call to me was entirely appropriate. She knows full well that the only reason any member of Congress can contact the prosecutor is with evidence that the prosecutor can use for the case, not for anything else. Her call to me was absolutely 100% inappropriate, and she knows that. She's trying to spin it otherwise. Regarding the vote-buying thing, unfortunately, New Mexico requires, or at least the state party requires, a $30 entrance fee. They need to get rid of that because at the very minimum, Peter, it would appear that there's the appearance of impropriety when candidates are able to pay those entry fees and tell these folks how to vote. It creates a real terrible perception problem.
And Governor Cargo alleges that the individuals he talked to claimed that the entry fee was not only paid, but they were paid $35 an hour to be there.
Well, that's outrageous. And I know Dave Cargo. He's a legendary figure here. He's a maverick. He's a straight shooter. If that's what he says, I believe him.
All right. We're going to continue in a moment with David Iglesias. He's got a new book coming out in a few weeks. It's called Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration. When we get a copy of the book, I'll read it, and then I'll invite you back, David. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits.
This is Hal. Sorry about that problem here. We got some problems with the traffic report this afternoon, but it is 448. We've got a hazard at Highway 156 at Meridian Road in Monterey County, so be advised there. We've got a collision on Highway 1 just south of Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz going southbound there. Be you're slow there. We've got a collision at Hollihan Road and Highway 152 in Santa Cruz, so you got to go slow in that direction. Also, southbound 1 at Del Monte Boulevard off-ramp in Monterey, we've got a collision there, so be advised. And finally, we've got a collision at Touro Park on Highway 68 in Monterey. Lots of problems out there. Drive careful. And thank you so much for listening to KRXA 540. We apologize for the traffic problems.
The host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with former New Mexico U.S. Attorney David Iglesias. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Steve joins us from Elk Grove. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air with David Iglesias.
Oh, good. Fine. I finally talked to somebody that used to be a federal attorney at a high level. I've had problems with federal attorneys at lower levels that acted like children, and they were obviously violating the law, and I helped federal judges out here in the San Francisco area show that this was going on. But my problem is these political firings. I think the Congress is involved in this in many ways because they require federal attorneys to civilly defend people who work in the government. I'll get an example would be, for instance, in the VA, if any case goes above $25,000, the U.S. attorney shall civilly represent the Veterans Administration, and yet he's also supposed to prosecute all crimes. And I don't know that the Congress can justifiably require the U.S. attorney to prosecute all crimes and yet defend federal agencies from charges against them
at the same time. That's an interesting issue. State attorneys general sometimes run into the same problem because they are essentially the attorney of record for state agencies. But when those agencies themselves violate the law, it can produce a conflict. Mr. Iglesias?
Yes, in fact, that happens occasionally, and what we would have to do is ask for the case to be assigned to a neighboring district. So our cases would typically go to the Western District of Texas or Arizona or Colorado. But, I mean, that what the gentleman said is correct. Occasionally there are conflicts, and you have to work them out.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steve, anything else?
Yeah, there's a problem that I see that there's malicious prosecution going on as a practical matter across the board to protect federal agencies, like that federal petty offenses are charged against veterans who are trying to get medical care. And, of course, there's no right to an attorney for a petty offense, and there's no right to jury trial. And that the I've seen cases where the docket had 40 veteran defendants on it, and it was dismissed in the interest of justice, although those 40 defendants were placed on the docket, supposedly in the name of justice at the same time. So you want to talk about politicization of the Justice Department. There's a good example. All you have to do is look at the dockets around the country of the U.S. magistrate courts and see that this is going on.
All right. Interesting.
I don't know if anybody's ever talked about it before.
All right. Thanks for raising that. Steve, David, your response?
Yeah, we would occasionally get cases out of the VA here in Albuquerque, and frankly, the petty misdemeanors aren't cases that most U.S. attorneys are interested in prosecuting because we have such a crushing caseload of felony cases. And for instance, here in New Mexico, we have to handle what in many states would be handled by the DAs. If a murder occurs or a child molestation case occurs in on the reservation, we have to prosecute that. That's a much more serious case than any you know, a trespass case or a case, you know, from the VA hospital. So you know, we have to use our best judgment and use our limited resources and target those cases that are more serious.
David Iglesias, last week you testified in Washington before Dianne Feinstein's subcommittee, and I'm often critical of our senior senator here in California for various political reasons, but I give her a lot of credit for sniffing out this issue and really being the first to confront Attorney General Gonzalez over it. We didn't get any coverage of the hearing last week. There was a Spitzer sex scandal, and the media was distracted just a little bit. So could you fill us in? What kinds of questions were asked, and did you have a sense that Feinstein and her colleagues are really, number one, properly concerned about these issues, and number two, have plans to address them?
It's a fiercely partisan issue, and of the members of the committee, only Feinstein showed up for the entire time. She's the chair. Schumer was there for part of the time. Bennett from Utah was there for part of the time, and then Chambliss was there for just a little bit of the time. Leahy and Bond showed up, gave a statement, then left. The topic was, do voter fraud prosecutions result in disenfranchisement of voters? And obviously, fiercely partisan, Republicans tend to look at things all in terms of there's lots of voter fraud going on, election fraud. Democrats tend to say there's a lot of disenfranchisement of legitimate voters going on. So that's what the focus was. I was a member of, let's see, there were five people on the panel, and my testimony is very limited. I gave about a five-minute statement on my experiences in 2004 through 2006 in setting up one of the only two voter fraud cases or task forces in the country. And basically that I had believed there to be lots of prosecutable cases, but after reviewing the evidence, I couldn't find one to prosecute. In a nutshell, that's what my testimony was.
And was there any follow-up questioning from the senators, or did they just nod?
Let's see. Bennett made a comment to the effect of basically he thought there was voter fraud going on out there, but that the law was written such that it made it too difficult to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess what he was saying is we need to change the laws to make it easier for federal prosecutors to go after, voter fraud. And Feinstein's point was, well, we don't need more legislation in this area because the problem doesn't exist.
Hmm.
You create a fix when there's a problem.
Right.
But there's not widespread systemic election fraud or voter fraud going on, which I agree with. Had you asked me this question 4 years ago, Peter, I would have said, no, I think there's lots of prosecutable cases. But when you look at the entire country and all the U.S. attorneys out there, there's only a handful of cases that have been prosecuted, and some of those have been overturned on appeal.
And one quick final question, David. You have a wife and four kids. What's the impact on them from this episode?
Well, my kids, being part of the celebrity generation, kind of like the fact that Dad's in the news,
Yeah.
They don't really understand what a difficult year it's been. My wife has been incredibly tough. I mean, she was just always there. She's supportive. But it was difficult. I mean, it was a very unpleasant experience to be taken out by your own friends and allies.
I regard you as a great American, and I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
David Iglesias, his book is coming out in May, and we'll read it and invite him back at that time. Brad Friedman joins us next. We'll talk election issues on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Would you be upset if your personal files at the State Department were snooped?
Of course you're mad and irritated. If somebody's looking at your personal information. I think any American can relate to that.
Department spokesman Sean McCormick. Trouble is, the three Americans are all candidates for president.
It's never a good day at the office when you have to call three senators and apologize because some of your employees looked into their passport files without authorization. But that's the kind of day Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice had today. Rice assured Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain she was sorry and said there is an investigation already underway. Next week may not get any easier for Secretary Rice, since at least three congressional committees have expressed an interest in getting some answers from State Department officials. Charles Wolfson, CBS News, the State Department.
Bill Richardson backs Barack Obama.
You will make every American proud to be an American, and I am very proud today to endorse your candidacy for president.
CBS News consultant, Democratic strategist Joe Trippi says this endorsement is significant for a couple of reasons.
One, because he was such a strong Clinton supporter in the past when Bill Clinton was president. And two, I think it sends a signal to other superdelegates and to the people out there that, hey, this Reverend Wright thing doesn't matter. I know this guy. I'm going to support him.
Stormy weather across the country, from the plains to the northeast. In Arkansas,
every river has already exceeded the flood stage, in some instances by several feet, and the crest is not supposed to take place in some of the rivers until the middle to late part of next week.
Tommy Jackson, Emergency Management in Little Rock. CBS News meteorologist George Collins.
Some of these rivers are going to crest, but maybe not until the next day or two, so This flooding isn't going to just go away anytime soon. It's going to be a serious problem probably right into the early part of next week.
Historic flooding expected along the Merrimack River west of St. Louis. FEMA reacting, Director David Paulson evoking the word Katrina.
We have a good handle on it. We moved in early, opened those lines of communication. We didn't want another issue like Katrina to happen where there was no communication system.
Snow shutting down the Milwaukee airport today, canceling hundreds of flights at Chicago's O'Hare. Perjury case against Barry Bonds now on hold. Prosecutors telling a federal judge in San Francisco today they plan to get a new indictment against baseball's home run king. Last month, the judge telling prosecutors the original indictment lumped too many allegations into too few counts. Said they should either drop some or add more. Judge ordering the sides to return to court in June. Good Friday in Rome.
Nel suo corpo sul legno della croce.
The Pope's annual Way of the Cross procession through the city. This is CBS News.
Buying a used car can be filled with pitfalls, but there's one sure way to avoid stumbling. Buy a Honda-certified used car. Only well-maintained late-model Hondas are eligible. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low APR financing on all Odyssey, Pilot, and S2000 certified used Honda models. Feeling a little more sure-footed, aren't we? Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
My name is Sandra, and I shop at Walmart. I'm currently taking 5 different medications.
My name is Amanda, and I'm a pharmacist here at Walmart. I know Sandra personally, and when our $4 program came out, she was able to get a whole month's generic prescription for $4.
The pharmacy at Walmart offers more than 300 generic prescriptions for $4. Each $4 prescription is for up to a 30-day supply of commonly prescribed dosages. See Walmart.com for details. Save money. Live better. Walmart.
Dexter has another problem. CBS's Peter King reporting on a kind of robotic arthritis showing up in the space station's new mechanical wonder.
The latest glitch is an error message that popped up just before last night's spacewalk.
The shoulder roll joint on its arm number 2 did not know what position it was in. And this was the exact same joint that we had just repositioned for the EVA.
Space Station Flight Director Ginger Carrick says they hope to come up with a software patch to clear the message, then run some tests. She says there's no immediate concern nor impact to the mission. As for the shuttle crew, they'll perform one last inspection on their orbiter's heat shield tonight. They're due back here in Florida Wednesday. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Authorities in South Florida say a man found naked on the street died after the authorities stunned him with a taser. Broward Sheriff deputies say James Garland spotted naked wandering through traffic at 4 a.m. after resisting arrest. They used the stun gun on him. He was transferred to a hospital where he died. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Buying a used car can be a roller coaster ride. Are you getting the car you think you're getting, or are you just being taken for a ride? Listen closely. Honda certified used cars. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And now you can get low APR financing on all Odyssey, Pilot, and S2000 certified used Honda models. Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
Wondering when it's the right time for service? Your Hummer knows. With Oil Life Monitor, OnStar Vehicle Diagnostics, and a complete service schedule in every owner's manual. And when it's time, head down the Good Wrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection.
I can't stop thinking about it.
See your Hummer Good Wrench dealer today or log on to GoodWrench.com. Diagnostic capabilities vary by model. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Good Wrench and go. We're keeping it simple.
Live from
from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Calling all stations. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. It's time to talk election protection.
Interrupting all program.
Radio from pirate satellites. Orbiting your living room. Cashing in the Bill of Rights. Human army surplus. Or refusing of the lights. Radio from pirate satellites.
Actually, the Peter B. Collins Show is delivered on a legal satellite, CONUS or Telstar or Galaxy, one of those. Every week at this time, we check in with Brad Friedman, the proprietor, citizen journalist, editor, and chief bottle washer at bradblog.com. And he's on the road, just down the road from us on the peninsula in Palo Alto today. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Peter. Now I got to start washing the bottles, too?
Yeah.
Man, I do too much around here as it is.
You can't just recycle them. You got to wash them first.
Okay, I will.
How are you?
I'm doing well, actually. Great up here in sunny Northern California. Sorry we couldn't make it the extra, 45 minutes up there to see you, but down here happily at a, we'll call it a retreat/conference of election integrity folks, a lot of whom appear in an upcoming election integrity documentary. There are more and more of them these days as we take back the media and become it ourselves. The film that they're screening this weekend, and the election integrity folks are here to participate and discuss, is a film by Dorothy Fadiman, an Oscar-nominated documentarian, whose first, I believe it's her first, feature-length documentary is called Stealing America, Vote by Vote. And we had a screening last night with about 300 people, and it's a terrific film. One of the folks in that film, and one of my personal heroes, fellow by the name of Ion Sancho, who not only you may have seen him in HBO's Hacking Democracy, but he also famously oversaw the 2000 recount back in Florida, and he is amongst the folks on hand here today.
He also was the guy who had Harry Hursty in his company at a time when the former Secretary of State in California, Bruce McPherson, was trying to say that Hursty was going to help him test some computers. Ion Sancho from Leon County, Florida, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
How are you doing, Peter?
It's great to talk to you again. And you?
I'm doing fabulous, particularly after seeing that documentary film last night.
Well, great. And Ion, tell me what you see as the progress made in Florida. You have a new Republican governor who replaced Jeb Bush, and Charlie Crist, at least from this distance in the comfort of my couch where the potato lies, it seems that Charlie Crist at least knows that electronic voting machines cannot be trusted, and he has talked about replacing all of them in Florida.
In fact, we have done so at his urging. Last year, the first legislative session that he officiated over, he forced through a bill which bans all touchscreen voting machines permanently in all capacities after 2011. And in the 2000 fall election, all DREs and touchscreens at the early voting sites have to be, and precincts have to be removed. All voters voting in Florida elections this fall, including the presidential election, are going to be casting their ballots on optical scan precinct count voting systems. And so we've had a tremendous sea change here. It's a fight that took 7 years, but this Republican governor gets it, and he really shows to all America that the issue of ensuring that our votes are counted is not, nor should it be, a partisan issue.
Now, who's going to pay for this shift to a new process?
Well, the state of Florida, interestingly enough, under the Bush regime, had kept 80% of the federal HUBBA funds that were given to it in 2002 and 2003. So $38.8 million that were in that fund were tapped to help pay for the switch in these urban areas. So we were able to accomplish this by basically tapping the money that the state had previously withheld from local jurisdictions.
Now, Ion Sancho and Brad, you get ready. I'm going to come to you next.
Sure.
Ion, I wanted to ask you about H.R. 811, the Holt bill that did not get passed last year. And Brad and I were kind of on the short end of the stick here in terms of opposing that bill because my belief, and I have to give Brad credit for influencing me, but is that that bill did not properly declare the paper trails that were required, and that would have been a step forward, but those paper trails would not necessarily have been designated in legal terms a ballot, and there was no guarantee that the paper trails would ever be audited or fully counted. And I'd like to know your thoughts about that bill and where you think Congress should be going in terms of correcting the errors of HAVA and the move to touchscreen voting machines.
Well, the Help America Vote Act, quite frankly, in my opinion, should be called the Help All Vendors Act, because that's all it was about, in my opinion. The 2000 election, which in Florida sparked this whole discussion, was quite frankly not a technological problem. And I think that therein lies sort of the problem. The Florida citizens didn't fail to vote because of bungled punch card systems, although they played a role. The issue was, in fact, partisan election administration at the state level and, quite frankly, negligent preparation for the election by local election administrators.
Now, the former there, you're blaming Catherine Harris.
Catherine Harris definitely played a critical role in this issue because as Secretary of State in the state of Florida in 2000, she oversaw the deliberate release of fraudulent felons lists, which when you realize that the vote margin in 2000 was 537 votes, and the Secretary of State's office admitted that they disenfranchised 20,000 African-American voters in the state of Florida, that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That was the problem. The lists in the state of Florida deliberately, and I underline that, deliberately were shaped to make legal voters into illegal voters through falsely describing them as felons. And that was where the problem went, and this process of partisan election administration is still, in my opinion, a major problem in the United States of America.
And that's...
We do not possess a nonpartisan professional elections administration system in this country. Instead, we depend upon partisan state apparatus to ensure that voters' votes can be counted.
Mm-hmm.
And going to the Holt bill, I think the Holt bill was, in many ways, almost Congress could do. But, in fact, it probably didn't go far enough in the direction that we needed to end this discussion. What I did like in the Holt bill was their recognition that we should establish some sort of a statistical audit procedure which should be required after every election. Because I will say, Peter, that having paper ballots is not enough. If the whole election process has to be looked as a holistic process, if you do not have a proper chain of custody, then you do not have anything with paper ballots. If you don't do audits, which can statistically confirm that, in fact, what you have on paper is, in fact, identical to what is on those electric screens, then you don't have anything. So it's not a matter of just one thing. There's not going to be a magic bullet to solve the problem that America faces, which is when are we going to start counting all legal voters' votes?
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, well, I want to jump in that these thoughts, remember, are coming from Ion Sancho, who is a Florida election official in the in Florida's capital. Leon County is actually Tallahassee, and Ion, was Jeb Bush one of your constituents?
Yes, Jeb Bush was one of my constituents,
okay.
Although I think he kept his voter registration in Miami-Dade and and voted by absentee ballot, as the current governor, Charlie Crist, has kept his residence in St. Petersburg and thus votes by an absentee ballot in Pinellas County.
I got you. And Ion is, you know, legendary in that he also, did you not have a perfect election, a quote-unquote perfect election, and was it 02 or 04, Ion?
Well, actually, it was 2000.
In 2000. And
the
how
2000
was
election... our error rate, which is the combination of all undervotes and overvotes, in fact, all votes not cast in the presidential election in that year, 1/5 of 1% was what that error rate was. That meant that if you looked at the Leon County votes, 99.82% of all votes were cast and counted in the presidential election race in 2000.
So
we put those ballots on the internet, even.
So it can be done, and I'm hoping, Peter, I know you got to get to a break, but there was a couple of points that Ion had made about a 28th Amendment that I'd love him to talk about, and also how the battle continues and what he has done to set up early voting locations mm-hmm. in Leon County as he continues to battle against the folks who don't want people to vote in the Sunshine State.
Ion Sancho, can you stay with us for another segment?
Certainly, sure. Certainly, Peter.
Well, we'll do that, and we'll just pepper you with questions and see what happens. Brad Friedman with me from bradblog.com, and Ion Sancho, as we mentioned, the elected voter, of the supervisor of elections. There it is, in Leon County, Florida. If you got a question or comment, give us a call now, 888-5-PETER-B. And in our next segment coming up on the half hour, we'll be joined by Dennis Domzalski from New Mexico with an update on the Heather Wilson vote-buying case. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, this is Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Okay, this is Hal again. I thought we had that resolved, but we don't. Latest report, we have a collision on Highway 1 southbound, just north of Morrissey Boulevard. We also have a traffic hazard on Highway 68, just east of Hitchcock Road. We have, and that's in Monterey County, a collision at 68 in Laguna Seca. We have a collision at Highway 1 northbound at 68 in Monterey. Hazard Highway 156 at Meridian Road in Monterey. And we still have problems on Highway 1 just south of Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz. Finally, a hazard on Del Monte in Monterey. Highway 1 southbound.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show as we continue with Mr. Election Protection, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and Ion Sancho, who runs elections. He's the supervisor of elections in Leon County, Florida. As Brad mentioned, that is the state capital county, Tallahassee. And, Brad, you go next. I've got another question for Ion, and we got a listener who has a question for him.
Okay. Well, I wanted to get, Ion was talking about a 28th Amendment to the Constitution, and I love the idea. And if we have time, we'll get in his story about early voting in Florida, which he told me about last night and I found very amusing. Can you give us a quick rundown on your proposal, Ion, for a 28th Amendment to the Constitution?
Well, I was rereading Bush v. Gore, something I do on occasion, because that is the case that really set the tone for the Bush administration and what we're going to be having dealing with the Supreme Court. And on page 104 of that decision, Anthony Scalia says that there is no federal right to vote for the office of the presidency. And he's correct. And let me just repeat that again for all your listeners and to you, Peter. You do not have a constitutional right under the United States Constitution to have a vote counted in the office of the presidency of the United States. And what cued me in on what this could mean is when I looked at the overseas military personnel voting records from the 2004 and 2006 elections, the last two major elections that we've had in which the United States has had armed forces stationed overseas fighting for our protection. And what I discovered was a scandalous figure. In 2006, only 52% of our troops overseas who tried to vote had their votes counted. And this makes a lie of the 27th Amendment, which was passed during the conflict in Vietnam, in which we recognize that if you were a citizen who was going to fight for your nation, you had the right to register to vote. And let me repeat that. You have the right to register to vote. You have no right to have that vote counted, which is why in 2006, 48% of all of the overseas military personnel who tried to have a vote failed to have that vote counted. And in the last presidential election in 2004, 3 million military personnel had their absentee ballots discarded.
Wow.
And not counted. And so while the 27th Amendment says you have the right to register and vote, the United States does not provide a constitutional requirement that those votes be counted for the military personnel or anyone. And as a result of this, it seems to me that we should close the loophole here that we have established, which is you have the right to vote. I think we should have a constitutional amendment, the 28th, that says that that vote and the votes of all legal American citizens must be counted.
Well,
that's what the 28th Amendment should say.
Well, let's get to work on that. I'll certainly support it. Now, Ian, I wanted to ask you next about Sarasota. The House Administration Committee recently concluded its study of the Christine Jennings-Vern Buchanan race. That's the one where it was a 370 or so margin for Buchanan, but 18,000 machine votes were lost. And I am embarrassed by the work of the House in dismissing the challenge from Christine Jennings.
I was disappointed, but it was absolutely something that I had predicted from the outset. And I had a conversation with the two members of the GAO, one of whom headed up this process. And in talking to them, their report was much different than what the press reported. The GAO individual in charge of the report, for example, said what they found was they could not determine what the cause was. Not that the machines didn't have a role to play. They simply could not find what the problem was. And this, if you talk to computer experts, it was exactly what the case was going to show. Our level of understanding what is going on in the black boxes and what occurs is right now beyond our capacity to identify conclusively. We introduced a technology, and we're using it to vote in many cases in this country, and we cannot discern when problems occur what are the cause of those problems, which is very troubling in terms of then why the heck are we using the technology?
And, Ion, since you're from Florida, I don't have time for Suzanne's call, but she wants to know about the problems with the early primary and the wrangling over a rerun. I flatly believe that the rules were set before and that they shouldn't be changed in the middle. What's your take?
I'm right there with you. On January 29th, we had an election in which 1.75 million Democratic voters voted. It cost $18.8 million to conduct that primary, and the state leadership in the Democratic Party, in my opinion, in Florida should be tarred and feathered because they had the ability to assert Florida law and require that the Florida legislature follow the DNC rules.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 103 of Florida statutes require that the state accede to the national party. Well, excuse me, the national party, as you stated, made the rules perfectly clear for all of the Democratic establishment in Florida, but they, I believe, because they put their personal interests ahead of the public.
Ion Sancho, got to stop because of the clock. You're my hero. Thank you very much. More with Brad in a moment.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambley, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. Those are the easy parts of the lyrics, you know. Sha-la-la-la-la-la. Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. His Bradness is on with us, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And in a moment, we'll get an update on the situation with Heather Wilson in New Mexico. But, Brad, I wanted to share a moment with you. There is, of course, a chip in my head that has been programmed by Bradblog.
Good.
And on certain occasions, it just causes me to do things. And earlier this week, I was in Washington at the Take Back America conference, and Norman Lear was presented to me at Radio Row for an interview. Kathleen Turner was really a little more exciting, but that's beside the point. Anyway, Norman was there with his trademark hat on, and he came to the microphone and said, well, I want you to talk to my new head of PFAW, too. And I said, okay. And I met her, and her name is Catherine Colbert, not Colbert, but Colbert, and she goes by Kitty. And she is a trial lawyer who represented pro-choice groups before the Supreme Court in a number of critical cases. Very interesting, dynamic woman. And she said that she'd been on the job for 2 days at PFAW. Mm. And so I didn't go for the jugular, but I said, Kitty, if you wouldn't mind, could you take a look at PFAW's position on election reform, and in particular, its misguided support of H.R. 811 last year? And I don't think she knows too much about what PFAW did, or maybe even may not know what Rush Holt's bill was about. But she was kind enough to say, yes, I will, and she gave me her card and said that I can call to follow up. So I think we'll give her a few weeks to settle into the job and find out, you know, what's actually in her desk drawers, and then call her up and have her on the show, and you and I can see if we can talk some sense.
Well, that would be great, because People for the American Way has been usually a good group, but they have really been, I would call them obstructionists, really, in the election reform movement as far as federal legislation that really needs to happen. I'm glad you got to speak with both the Norman Lear. He's the founder of PFAW, and
That's
I had
right.
met with him back when we were in the middle of that fight over H.R. 811. And if we can move People for the American Way, I promise you we can move the rest of the entire Washington establishment, and perhaps we can get some real federal election reform legislation done.
All right. Before we go to New Mexico, anything you want to add here? Did you want to tell us Ion's story since we ran out of time for him to tell it?
Well, I'll give it to you real quickly. He continues to fight the powers that be, and last night we were sitting outside. We're down here in Palo Alto at this conference, and we were chatting late night, and he told me that basically he spends his time looking at the new laws in Florida that they try to institute to keep voters from voting, and he spends his time figuring out how to work around them. And one of them recently is that they've instituted early voting locations may only be set up in public libraries. Well, the problem is, in some of the inner city areas where he is, in Tallahassee, there are no public libraries. And so he called one of the local libraries and said, hey, you guys got any books we can use? And what he did was he actually carted loads of books down to, I think it was a community center down in the inner city, made that a library for the period of the early voting period, and promised the librarian they wouldn't have to do any extra work to accomplish this. So his election officials actually both ran early voting out of these AirSats libraries that they set up,
mm-hmm.
and checked out books to the public when they came in to vote. And as soon as the election was done, they took the books, sent them back to the library, and that was that. But he's going to be doing that again in 2008 and creating his own libraries to ensure that as many people who can vote as possible actually do get to vote. And that's why you said he's your hero. I join you in that. He is my hero, too. And as well, he repeated again to me today what he, I've quoted him saying so often, and I say it myself. He says, look, I'm an election official. You should not have to trust me. Don't trust me. If you have any questions, make me prove your election has been counted accurately. And for that alone, he's my hero, and I say the same thing as a journalist. Don't trust me. Make me prove it. And I think both he and I try to meet that burden, and I wish there was more election officials and journalists who did exactly that.
Well, let him know if he needs more books for his temporary libraries that my bush-bashing bookshelf is sagging once again.
Perfect. We'll send him on over.
All right. Now let's go back to New Mexico. We spent our second hour with David Iglesias, the former U.S. Attorney of New Mexico. Fascinating discussion about his dismissal, the politicization of the Justice Department, and yes, we talked about Heather Wilson, too. I'll bring that up in a few minutes. Right now, let me introduce Dennis Domzalski. He has been blogging on his own site, F Brilliant, and also has been guest blogging at bradblog.com. And, Dennis, we credit you with breaking this story about the vote buying in the Republican convention that Heather Wilson attended a few weeks back. Dennis, welcome.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the plug, but honestly, it was Laura McKellum, who you had on a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
Who actually broke these stories. She broke them on KKOB radio, and of course, as you know, they killed those stories because, of all things, bloggers hadn't picked up on them, and Laura eventually quit. So I managed to break the story about Laura quitting because of a bizarre memo that her idiot news director sent her. But it's taken off, and it's I'm glad that it has, because it needs people need to know about this stuff.
And tell us what is new, because we last covered this about 2 weeks ago with Dave Cargo and Laura McCallum. Dave is the former Republican governor of the state who essentially is a complaining witness in this matter. Tell us what's new there, Dennis.
Well, what's new is this, is that Dave has filed an official complaint with the Secretary of State's office. They run the elections here. And the Secretary of State, Mary Herrera, is a Democrat, and she has taken this to the State Attorney General's office. The AG's office acts as the Secretary of State's lawyer, if you will, and the Secretary of State can't do anything, can't bring any charges, can't do anything without the AG's office helping him out on that. But the interesting thing is that the AG's office, which is run by Gary King, he's also a Democrat, doesn't seem to want to do anything about this. In fact, last week, they said they weren't going to look at it, investigate it, because these political party conventions and these elections, they said, were private affairs that didn't fall under the state's election code. Well, we happened to look at the election code, and I think we're full of it, because New Mexico's election code says this about the nominating process for the political parties. It says all nominations of candidates for public office in New Mexico made by political parties shall be made pursuant to the election code. No political party shall be permitted to have the names of its candidates printed on any election ballot unless and until it is qualified as provided in the election code. That seems to me like these are not private elections and that they are indeed governed by state law. And state law says it is a fourth-degree felony to basically buy a vote, to offer someone a bribe for a vote and to accept a bribe to vote a certain way. So the other interesting thing about this is that yesterday a small newspaper in northern New Mexico called the Rio Grande Sun actually shed some light on maybe why the Attorney General refuses to take this seriously. And basically the Democratic Party, state Democrat Party, held their statewide convention on March 15th, and two of the candidates for the District 3 nomination, that's Tom Udall's seat, wound up, not paying people, but they offered him gifts, these delegates. Don Wiviat, he's a developer, a millionaire developer out of Santa Fe. His campaign paid for motel rooms for 20 delegates to their convention. And then Ben Ray Lujan's campaign was offering coupons for hot dogs and pizzas to any delegate who voted for him. So when I chatted with former Governor Cargo, I said, why do you think the AG's office isn't doing anything about it? He says, look, everyone in this state does it, both parties do, and they just don't want it to wash over to the Democrats. So it's interesting what's going on. The AG's office is still insisting that that these things are private affairs, not governed by state law.
And to be clear, what seems to have happened at that GOP delegate nominating convention is, at least the allegations that Governor Dave Cargo is making and a couple of other Republican elected officials, was that people were having their registration fees paid by the by some of the candidates, including
by the campaigns, yeah,
by the campaigns, and this is something that's sort of been marginalized in this discussion. Some allegations that people were actually being paid $35 an hour.
Absolutely.
To be there. Now, Heather Wilson, and Dennis, you can correct me here, but she has finally come forward and admitted that, yes, we paid for registration fees, but only for 5 people out of a conference of, I think it was 5,000 at this convention. I'm sorry, 500 or so at this
500,
convention.
500, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Do
and
we have any evidence?
Checks,
what's that?
From her campaign to that effect. Now, the County Republican Party here in Bernalillo County, they've been somewhat cooperative, but they kind of have pulled back as well because we've been asking for the names of these people. They can figure out who those people were, who got those checks from Wilson's campaign. The checks were written out to the Bernalillo County Republican Party. They weren't made out to individuals, but their record keeping is actually very good, and they can pretty much place a name to those checks. They haven't released those names yet.
Well, is the investigation moving forward as far as determining above and beyond those 5 people that Heather Wilson admits to? I suspect it certainly sounded like there was a whole lot more people who had their registration fees paid for and who may have been paid by the hour to actually be there. Are they moving forward beyond those 5 people?
It doesn't appear that they are at this point.
What's that?
It does not appear that they are moving forward beyond this point at this point right now.
And yet, did Cargo's official complaint to the Secretary of State include more than just those 5 people, and did it include the $35 an hour business as well?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Well, it was interesting, gentlemen, an hour ago, just about this time, I was talking with David Iglesias, and I raised the issue about Heather Wilson. And first I asked him broadly about her credibility, and he was sharply critical of her on that basis, particularly related to the phone call she made to him and her recent statements that it was appropriate. He said they both know it was not. And when I asked him about the Bernalillo convention and these allegations of vote buying, he first said, well, there has been a practice of campaigns paying these registration fees, and I think that should end. And then I said that Governor Cargo had alleged that people told him they had been paid $35 an hour to be there. He described that as an outrage and said that's clearly over the line, and he found that unacceptable. So it was interesting to hear his reaction on that. Now, Dennis, also at the blog, you report that finally the Albuquerque Journal has seen fit to report this story.
It is one of the most pathetic examples of, it's not journalism, it's a disgrace. And thank God for bloggers like Brad and the blogosphere. You know, this is now a one-newspaper town because the Albuquerque Tribune just folded. But it's sickening what this newspaper does and what it did. This is a huge story, and it's huge, maybe not in the numbers of people who were paid or whose registration fees might have been paid, but the fact that they were paid at all. This is a question as to how people get on state and national ballots. And if parties are paying, you know, if campaigns are paying for this, that's an issue. This isn't a system where the masses just show up and everybody participates in democracy and says, what a wonderful thing. These people are either being paid or they're all insiders. I understand that's how conventions work, but when you start paying people, when you start compensating people, it takes away the element of, my gosh, I'm voting for something because I believe in their ideas or whatever. Now, it's a big deal. And the fact that the state's largest newspaper has refused to cover this until more than 2 weeks later, it's just sickening. It's a disgrace. And it's, you know, the people of this community are poorly served by that newspaper. It's awful.
And in the blog, you quote a very weak allegation from a registration fee for rank-and-file Republicans to attend their county conventions, a fee candidates sometimes pick up, might be the root of a behind-the-scenes political flap.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah, isn't that good? Might be the root of a behind. Oh, my God. I read that and I threw the newspaper out, put it that way.
No even suggestion that there might be criminal or other violations here.
No, none at all. None at all.
Yeah.
And their first story that was about a week ago, they buried the Laura McKellum. They actually had to cover it because there was a lot of talk on radio and, of course, on the blogs. And so they wrote a 7-paragraph story on that, but they didn't even mention Heather Wilson's campaign.
Yeah.
It's just a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
Well, Dennis, I want to thank you for covering this. Thanks for joining us today. I got to run to a break.
Okay.
But people can read all about it at bradblog.com. We've been talking with Dennis Domzalski, and Bradness will continue. He's got a story about Sequoia getting hacked. Ha! That's some kind of justice. Let me work on my Chris Matthews lab. Ha! Okay. And also, he wants to slam ABC News, and we're going to let him. That's coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Well, checking traffic on KRXA, and definitely busy as we get into our final report of the week. Santa Cruz southbound 17 after Highway 1, it's a two-car crash. All the activity is off to the side. Also in Santa Cruz southbound 1 before Morrissey Boulevard, it's a two-car crash in the center divide there. We had a separate crash earlier. That's been moved off to surface streets, but look for heavy traffic as you approach the scene. Salinas Highway 68 at Hitchcock Road, a metal pail. That's being bopped around the lanes by cars as they go by. And Highway 68 eastbound at Laguna Seca Raceway, two-car fender bender. That's off to the side. CHP now on the scene taking a report. And in Santa Cruz, northbound 1, the Emmeline Avenue off-ramp. That's still shut down for some road work, so that may cause delays if you're in the area. This is brought to you by Carfax. Are you shopping for a used car this weekend? Be on the lookout. The number of cars with flood damage in the Monterey area has more than doubled. Ask your car dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have a great weekend. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441, or browse at thinkertoys.com.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the Sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, talking election protection with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. He's there in the classic green. And Brad, first up, you've got an item here at the top of the blog today that Sequoia Systems, that makes electronic voting machines, has had a visit from one or more hackers.
It's a pretty amazing story. We've been following it at brandblog.com. And the Sequoia voting, touchscreen voting machines, they call them the AVC Advantage. They make a couple of different touchscreens. The Advantage failed on Election Day in New Jersey and Super Tuesday. Of course, it failed. Many of the machines failed to boot up at all in the morning. And the New Jersey Governor Corzine was held up himself for 45 minutes, unable to cast a vote until they were able to get the machines booted up. But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, after the election, and they were doing their post-election canvass, they discovered that the machines, these AVC Advantage machines across at least six different counties, actually mistotaled voter counts. In other words, there was a different total on the internal paper trail as far as who voted, how many voters voted. There was a different total on that paper trail than the internal memory cards in those machines. And I'm happy to say, as a result of that, the election officials across the state of New Jersey unanimously voted to ask the state AG to require an independent study immediately of these machines to figure out what happened, because Sequoia came back with some kind of convoluted reason that made sense to absolutely nobody. Furthermore, what they did was Sequoia then sent a threatening email, and we've got that email at BradBlog. They sent an email threat to Princeton professors Ed Felton, who of the famous Diebold virus hack from a couple of summers back, and another Princeton professor, Andrew Appel, who had previously hacked an ABC Advantage machine, and threatened them with legal action should they do an independent analysis of these machines. The election officials in various counties were outraged by this. They said, hey, if Sequoia has nothing to hide, why would they be afraid of an independent analysis? And they're getting a lot of bad press for that, so Sequoia put out a crazy press release that said, we're in favor of third-party testing. We've had the Election Assistance Commission test our machines, and we've had states like California and Colorado test our machines. Of course, what they don't say is that when the EAC tested it, it was tested by a company that was bought and paid for by Sequoia. And when California and Colorado and Ohio tested those Sequoia machines, they found that they failed on every measure. They didn't mention that in their report, nor did they mention the fact that no state so far has tested the AVC Advantage touchscreens. They've only tested the Edge machines. Well, just as soon as they put out that press release on the Sequoia website, apparently the Sequoia website itself got hacked. And their entire, what they call their ballot blog, went down. And the first one to report it to Sequoia was a fellow by the name of Ed Felton, the Princeton professor who was threatened with legal action by Sequoia. So irony abounds, and the fight continues.
All right, and what's going on over at ABC News that's making you uncomfortable?
Oh, well, to say the least, Dennis Domzalski in the last hour was talking about Albuquerque Journal and their worst example of journalism ever. I don't know. ABC and their Brian Ross and their quote-unquote investigative unit may have outdone the Albuquerque Journal with this report. You know, folks have been trying to get Hillary Clinton's White House schedules, her records now, and they finally received them this week, some 11,000 pages, and thanks to the great investigative reporters at ABC, they were able to immediately go right through those 11,000 documents and come out with the most important report that they ran as breaking news on their website night before last, which was Hillary Clinton may have been in White House on Blue Dress Day. This was what they got out of those 11,000 pages. This is how they used their First Amendment obligation to inform for a free press and to inform the country, is to offer this salacious, disgusting story with, as far as I can figure, absolutely zero news value whatsoever. And it gave them the chance to run a big picture of Hillary Clinton and quite literally put a photo of the famous Monica Lewinsky blue dress, quite literally under Hillary's nose, on the front page of the ABC News website.
Lovely.
They have hit an all-time low, as far as I'm concerned, underscoring exactly why the blogs and you, Peter B. Collins, are necessary.
Well, we do what we can. And, Brad, while you were in conference today, Alternate reported that Rush Limbaugh's encouragement of Republicans to vote in Ohio may have been a fifth-degree felony, because in order to change party affiliation, you have to fill out a form swearing allegiance to the new party's principles under a penalty of election falsification. So maybe he can join Ann Coulter in the dock for a little bit of election fraud.
Or join them not in the dock, as it is wont to happen when Republicans commit fraud.
All right, Brad, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend.
Brad Friedman, read him at bradblog.com. This is Peter B. Thanks for listening.
We're talking again with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, I just gave you a nice little chocolate raspberry treat. Can I drink wine and eat chocolate at the same time? Is there a rule against that? Is there a law in France that says I can't?
No, to the contrary. My girlfriends and I sometimes get together and have a treat of chocolate with one absolutely scrumptious wine that we have, which is called Cartagène, which is, again, something that people make in the south of France, pretty much for the family. It's a treat, and they pull it out when you go visit them. You know how farmers are and people who are close to the land, and they pull out the thing that they've made and they've kept in their cellar, and the foie gras and the special sausage and all this, and they sit around and they share this little treat with them. It's like communion.
Find out more about organic wines at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. Order by phone toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. Mention Peter B. Collins and see what happens.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Passport file snooping scandal.
The State Department says the files of presidential contenders Hillary Rodham Clinton and John McCain have also been breached. That's in addition to the unauthorized snooping into Barack Obama's file. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
I talked to the senator.
Did you say you were sorry?
I told him that I was sorry, and I told him that I myself would be very disturbed if I learned that somebody had looked into my passport file, and therefore I will stay on top of it to get to the bottom of it.
The State Department's Inspector General is investigating. Some are now asking if the sneak peeks were politically motivated. It's not clear exactly what the employees saw. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
Barack Obama is welcoming Bill Richardson with open arms.
I am extraordinarily grateful to have the support of one of the great public servants of these United States, Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico.
Now what does the endorsement from the nation's only Hispanic governor really mean? Political scientist Larry Sabato.
He has been losing Hispanics and Latinos by landslide proportions to Hillary Clinton. And we have something called the Puerto Rico primary coming up on June 1st, and there are a lot of delegates assigned to Puerto Rico. Barack Obama doesn't want a landslide defeat toward the end of the primary campaign.
Rivers are rising. Rivers from Ohio to Oklahoma. CBS's Hari Srinivasan in the riverside community of Fenton, Missouri.
It's man against the river, and the river is winning.
We're looking at a level about here, so we're still building this fall up.
This watering hole is normally about two blocks from the water. More than 500 volunteers have pitched in to try and save the structures in downtown. The only thing keeping the water at bay is canvas and sand. They've used more than 2,500 tons of it in Fenton alone.
And as the rain continues to fall, flood waters continue to rise, except where it's cold. Kurt Violet is housebound in Caribou, Maine, trapped by record snowfall.
Oh, it's huge. My house alone, you can't even see out the windows for the most part from the banks and from the plows. Yeah, it's a lot of streets are just tunnels.
Snow completely shutting down the Milwaukee airport today. 350 flights canceled at Chicago's O'Hare. An autopsy of that Michigan tourist killed when smacked by a ray that jumped out of the Florida Key waters at the